family of a local teenager says she never would have left home without calling.
Just praying for the best. I want my daughter home, man. And if she can't come home, I just want to know, is she there?
These posters around the towns of Livermore and Jay beg anyone with information to come forward. Posters that Richard puts up every spring, never losing hope.
Tell me what happened to my daughter. Justin, just look me in the eyes so I can see her.
An arrest in a nearly four-decade-old cold case. Thanks to cutting-edge DNA technology, the arrest happening exactly 39 years to the day.
When Parabon Nanolabs used that sample to create 3D models of the suspected killer's face.
It's heartbreaking. We miss her, and we're going to find her. We're going to keep looking till we do.
It's like a never-ending nightmare. It doesn't end. It keeps returning and coming back.
What if I told you an 18-year-old girl is out with friends on the night of July 7th, 1978, seemingly heading home, she does not return? What if I said 2 days later, her body was found in a remote airfield that only locals would know of? This July makes 44 years that Mary Tanner was murdered, and a killer continues to walk free. Her sister, Dr. Beth Goodwin, not given up on justice for Mary, and tonight we are joined by her. Tonight we're joined by Dr. Beth Goodwin. Now I want to make sure I get this right. So you're an archival forensic odontologist.
Very, very good. Yes, that's exactly what I am.
But we're not sure what that is. Can you explain that to us?
Oh, well, the bottom line is I'm a dentist who gets sick of the living and went to the dead. And her motto is the deader, the better. So most of what I do are old grave sites. That's what pays good. Native American indigenous people, burial grounds. That's my expertise. So a lot of these, especially down where I am now in South Carolina, there's a lot of development. So every time they dig a piece of property and they find any kind of bones or teeth or whatever, then they call me. Or someone in my line of work, and you determine whether it's animal, vegetable, or mineral, and then you decide if it's Native American, indigenous, then they can't build there without the federal government intervening and giving a dispensation, and everybody has to be moved, and whatever you find has to be defined. So I spent a lot of time in South Dakota, and I spent a lot of time down here now just because those are the two big areas that people are just kind of buried. So
I find that really neat because, you know, I didn't reach out to you because of what you're currently doing for work, but it definitely ties into what we talk about on here. Why I reached out to you, and as you know, is we wanted to discuss your sister's case. Mary Tanner disappeared July 7th, 1978. She was 18 years old from Kennebunk, right?
Yes, sir.
So can you describe your sister for us? Like, what was it like growing up with her? What kind of person is she?
She was 3 years younger. I have an older brother who's 9 years older, and then there were three of us bundled together in 3 years. So she was the youngest. So whatever you think of policemen in a family, she hit them all. So she was just a free spirit. I was the academic one. The one in the middle was, they said, the religious one, and then there was Mary. And she never met anyone she didn't like. She was the single most trusting soul on the planet. I mean, everyone was her friend. She was speak to everybody. She didn't care if they were the goofy kid or the weird kid. Everyone was her friend. And she just loved life, music and dancing and gymnastics and anything physical she loved. Anything academic, not as fond, but she just lived life to the fullest. And she used to say, I told this to someone else, and that she just had to get it all in because she didn't know how long she had. And I always thought that was just weird because that wasn't me, but she just loved everybody.
So July 7th, I'm sure, I know Kennebunk has a big 4th of July festival and everything. And then July 7th, they actually had a parade back then, correct?
Yes. Well, it was they called it the dump parade.
I thought that was really funny.
And it was a big thing, and Miss Dumpy was crowned, and it was a thing. People were on dump trucks and just in trash bags. And now I wasn't there. I was at Orono, and I did one of those programs where you told the freshmen what to do when they were going to come in the fall. So I had been there the whole time. I had just come in at night. So I didn't come in until close to 10 o'clock, but that was what they were all doing. I mean, that was the thing. That was big weekend. And she'd even run for Miss Dumpy at one point. I couldn't tell you what year, but it was what people did. That was the thing to do in Kennebunkport. Let's go to that. Kennebunkport Dump Association Parade. And they had a ball, you know, and Neptune would come, and it was a big deal.
I've seen some video and pictures of it. It's pretty neat.
It was one of those things. When I was in high school, that was the big thing. But, I was in college, so excuse me.
So
that was a local thing by then, you know, when I was... She was right in the middle of it because also she stayed back a year in high school. I mean, in when she was small. So we were actually 4 years apart. So we never actually attended a school at the same time because she was always 4 years behind me. So however she behaved in school, it was like, you know, okay. It was anecdotal. Hearsay. But
so July 7th, she had attended the parade, I believe, correct?
Yes, sir.
And then all the kids went out afterwards and kind of partied like teenage kids do, right? Kind of hung out. And can you tell us about that night, what your family has pieced together as far as the timeline?
And it's interesting because I will tell you what my timeline is and what my family had, and then people will tell you that to my face that I was wrong. But when I got back just after 10. And my dad was sitting at the kitchen table because Mary's boyfriend's brother and his brother's best friend had died in a car accident in Massachusetts the week before. And the funeral was Saturday. So my dad was up getting ready to go to bed. And then they were going to get up and go in the morning and go to this funeral. And my dad was going to take her, drive to Winchester or one of those W ones. And attend that funeral with her. So she wasn't in yet, but he had to go to bed because he had to drive. And so I kind of stayed up a little while, but I was tired. So we all went to bed. And her not coming in at 10 o'clock, that's kind of what happened. So when we got up in the morning, she hadn't been to bed. So the first thought was that maybe she had gone with someone else because no one had cell phones or anything. Everything was landlines. So the first thought was she'd probably gotten a ride, or Mike had come, the boyfriend Michael had come and gotten her or something. So my dad called Massachusetts, nothing, called around. No, they hadn't seen her, didn't know. But nobody thought the worst at that point. So then the day went on and Michael called to see what she was. So we started, you know, going to different people's houses because she had every friend in Kennebunkport, Wells. So we wandered around looking, seeing what would happen. Called the police. They said, well, you know, it's not even a day. It's been this, that, and the other thing. So then it turned in at night and we started to get worried. And my mother doing my mother things, which is a whole story in its own. And my dad was looking around. We were driving around because we all had cars. So I'm driving around and my other sister was looking and maybe she'll turn up. And then
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No,
you
can interject anywhere.
Had they reached or had your family reached out to the boyfriend yet at this point? And already talked to him and confirmed that she wasn't there?
Because he'd already gone to the funeral and he was mad at her because he thought she, you know, didn't show up and thought she flaked it. So it was one of those things. Everybody was mad at each other. And it was like, so then we realized something must have been bigger than we thought or worse than we thought or whatever. But you try not to think of the worst thing always, which is my job now, to think of the absolute worst. So it's kind of weird. So anyway, Sunday morning,
one of the local police came, and because we had called him, and he was more of a friend than a cop, which sounds weird, but if you knew the situation, you'd know what that meant. But, and he came and said, you know, we, you know, people are looking, but we don't think it's bad, blah, blah, blah. And then someone said, but Gracie Evans, and some guy had seen a body, and then it just snowballed from there.
And then, had she ever been reported missing it by this point, by Sunday morning?
Yeah, the cops, they knew that, but there's a whole 24, and then it was 48 hours, and they're like, well, and there was a party, and they kept giving us reasons why it could have, wasn't a problem, versus, you know, putting a bolo out or something that you might do now. But it was Kenny, they kept saying, it's Kennebunk, it's the 70s or whatever. And I could say, well, what about Mary Olenchek? What about other people who go missing and you couldn't find them? What do you think of that? You know, it was more, and, right. I wasn't in any position to question. I was just a kid. But they kept, my dad kept at them, and they just said, don't worry, we'll find her, blah, you know. But to tell you there was a formal, no, because they didn't do that. They, it was such a small little town that everyone just assumed they knew what was going on, and that now, and it hadn't been 48 hours. And before 48 hours hit, then they found the body in the morning, I think like 10 o'clock in the morning. And I can't tell you exact time because I hadn't been to bed since, I'd been at, since 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock Saturday morning, I hadn't been to bed. So I couldn't, it's a little fuzzy. If, and it's 40, oh, geez, goodness gracious. Been a while.
Like if we can,
3 years.
If we can just step back for a second.
Sure.
It's interesting that you mentioned Mary's name, Mary Olenchek. She disappeared close to the same time, right? What, when did she go?
Well, that was 70, I believe. 70 or 71. So it had been a break, but it's 3,500 people back then. Hello?
And she was found.
I just always thought they were just so cavalier about it, for lack of a better word, that was like, even thinking then, and you know, I got hushed and told to be quiet, and I didn't know what was going on, and I had no standing, and they were like, yeah, this doesn't make any sense. But if you knew the police department and how they operated, it wasn't too, in retrospect, it's not surprising at all.
I apologize. I thought it was actually 76 that she disappeared, but you're right. It was 1970 that Mary had disappeared and was found.
And that's only because we've done post traces and, you know, because technically that's not solved either.
Right.
Technically, which is another problem I have with the cold case squad, but.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Technically.
Had your family, I mean, I don't want to spend a lot of time on Mary's case, on Mary Olenchek, because this is about your sister's, this is about your sister's case, but at the time when you were looking for your sister, did Mary Olenchek's name come up?
Absolutely, at least me. I mean, yeah. Mary, that's like, hello, and it didn't dawn on them that, oh no, well, they're, you know, she's just missing, that one's dead, you know, yeah, well, hello. That one was missing before she was dead, right?
Right. I mean,
it was just, and they kept saying, well, that one was in the port, and this one's in Kennebunk. Well, you don't know that. It's like, I come from a long line of lawyers and old people with logic, and my background's engineering, so loose ends are not favorable in my mind. So I kept trying to make these points, and I just remember they're like, well, this, you know, they kept placating, and oh, it'll be okay. And it's hard because I know my dad and the chief of police were friends, but everyone in that town was related but us. So you always wondered, you know, are they hot? I always think they're hiding stuff anyway, because that's the opposite of Mary. She would have trusted everybody, and I don't trust anybody. So God and Chick-fil-A, and that's about it. So
it's Sunday morning now. Now, what was going on at Gracie Evans Field that morning?
Well, they flew planes in and landed. It was like a big blueberry plane. So it's literally a field. It's not anything but this big blank space. I mean, and the guy, I think they were skydiving or something, or I'm pretty sure that's what was happening.
Yeah, that's what I had read. They were
skydiving. And and then the guy spotted it hanging from, he hadn't even jumped yet, and I guess they spotted it. And then he went down, and there it was. And it's interesting because people tell me that, oh, yeah, we hunted all night at Gracie Evans Field. And I'm like, why? Why would you pick that spot unless you already knew? Or, well, people partied there. So you're partying there and you don't see a body? How drunk or stoned or messed up are you that you trip? And it wasn't covered at all where it was. But back to retrospect and what I know now, you could see where it was dragged. It was moved. It wasn't, that wasn't where she died. It just wasn't, it doesn't fit any, you know, I've seen thousands of pictures. And now that, you know, 40 years later, I can see it was moved. Dirt doesn't match. Leaves don't match. Foliage doesn't match. And I, you know, bring that up to the cold case. And they're like, oh, I know I'm jumping ahead, but they're like, oh, yeah, you're right. But that was the thing that, but at the time I didn't know. And they said that all hunted and. And then after they retrieved the body, they did hunt and they made a mess of the crime scene, but that'll.
How were you guys notified that morning?
Well, a couple, well, I was out looking around and it's kind of funny, but the head of the motor local Hells Angels, which were called, my dad called them tin ponies, but they were called Iron Horsemen. Told me that he had heard it at whatever. And I think the cops told my dad, because my dad didn't tell my mom right away, because I think he was in shock too. But it was this gentleman named Bobby Pelletier, who was a great guy. And he was a local policeman not that long, but long enough. And he kind of filled us in and my dad told me, and then we had to go identify the body, but we didn't tell my mother till after we saw the body.
Wow.
Which was in the basement of the police station, which I thought was weird, but it hadn't gone to the mortuary people yet, which is local too, but everything in that town is incestuous in the sense that everybody knows everybody and everybody keeps each other's secrets, not that the right. Actual... not in the literal definition, but in that thought process. Mm-hmm. So I always thought it was weird why she was in the basement of the police station, which isn't a morgue at all. And then she ends up at Bivers, which is the funeral home. I've always wondered about that period. But yeah.
Can you, if you can, and I know this is hard for you, even though it's been so many years that she was your sister, but if you can describe... Yes. You know, the scene and the state of the body.
Oh, well, it had obviously been moved, which doesn't sound like a big deal, but when you move a body, there's extra abrasions, there's extra, which I didn't know at the time. None of that made sense to me at the time. But the longer I do what I do, the more I can tell what's going on. And there was at least 3 skull fractures. The body itself was puffy. Oh, it's in post-rigor, so it's in that, I say mushy state, it's slightly bloated, and it hasn't started decomposing, but it has all the, I don't know how vivid you want to be, but what happens is the bodily fluids produce a gas. So you get these bloatings in different places, and then, but she obviously had 3 skull fractures. You could see that, but you didn't have to be anatomy major.
Did they have any idea what caused the skull fractures? Did they have a
chain?
They said chain.
It was beating in a chain. Yeah, abs. All the photos I have, it's definitely a chain. Looks like a chainsaw chain, and then more of an anchor chain, like something you would haul something with. You know what I mean? The big thick chain. But there were 2 types of chain marks. So. At the time, I didn't realize that, but it's interesting. And I think, I mean, I was a wet-fingered dentist. I had no interest in that until a couple of things came up when we lived in Massachusetts. And then the longer that happened, the more information I could get and the more ways I could get information, whether it be
common practice or more intricate, more interesting ways to find information, so to speak. And then there's a couple things that came 10 years after, then 15 years after, stuff that they said didn't exist and it did. And it's just crazy stuff. And now, you know, the DNA now, I can get DNA off a rock. So
do they have any DNA evidence from Mary's body?
Not that they'll admit to. And they might, well, they might not, but let's just say it exists. In my opinion, it exists.
Wow.
And that's another reason Janet and I had a few discussions, because technically, legally, all those chains of custody things, some of this evidence found its way into drawers and people gave it to you, but there's no way to prove one thing or the other, even though you know. And then one of our big pieces of evidence is a necklace. She and I had the same, my dad gave she and I each a cross when we both turned 16 and then when she turned 16, and they were engraved. And my other sister in the middle, Gail, she didn't have one because she was Catholic and she got a rosary. I don't know. I'm a weird family anyway. So Mary and I had identical ones, but Mary had lost hers and had taken mine. So when they had the jewelry, there was all around the jewelry except that cross. And I knew I was wearing the one that said Mary, and I knew mine was missing. That comes in later that the cops don't have any interest in, but.
Well, can you tell us about that?
No. And the only reason I can't right now is because there's a third person involved who went out of her way to change her name and everything. But let's just say that piece of evidence is secure and been tested and not legal in any way. Which I don't mean to laugh, but I can get anything tested for anything, genetics, mm-hmm. through the FBI. They don't ask where it comes from. They don't care. As long as I do my job with them, they don't care. So I've had things tested. And
let me know if there's anything you want us to cut out of here. So if you say something that you don't
I can tell you who did it, but I probably shouldn't on the air. So.
Well, we wouldn't broadcast
I know, but that. I know who did it, and I can prove it. Mm-hmm. But I can't legally. When you asked me about who notified, originally they thought it was me. We looked similar enough, we were built similar enough, but she had my clothes on. So one of my friends recognized the clothes that worked as a dispatch and said, oh my God, I know who that is. I recognize the jewelry, I recognize the clothes. And then it's like, so they come to my house and I answer the door and it was like some macabre thing. And then they realized It was, you know, wrong sibling, wrong daughter, whatever. Because our third sister was much taller, much heavier, dark. We were blonde or lighter and blue-eyed. She wasn't, you know, so they knew it wasn't her. But she had on my clothes because we always traded clothes. I had better clothes. I had better job. So anyway, but that's how I realized now that I didn't even tell Rick O'Neill that, is that they had said, we think it's you. Well, no, we think it's Elizabeth. And I'm like, I can vouch for that. And then I realized it was awful, but it was such a weird little twist or like, what? You know, and then you go, well, it can't be me. So let's go next logical step. So, but oh yeah, it was. And then it was like this weird someone else in a movie type for a couple, 3 days while the plan. I planned the funeral with my dad. My mom was not having any of it. And it was just this weird, we got to do this. We got to do, you know, it was like it kept your sanity because you like lined everything up. And I mean, it was obviously not an accident. That's not how accidents work.
Right.
And then they just didn't seem to do anything. It all stalled. My dad got some private investigator to do stuff, but he got someone from Boston. I don't know his name and he's long dead, but he hit wall after wall. And they said, oh, yeah, we're investigating. And the crime scene was just, oh, wow. What they said was the crime scene, where the body was
all tore up anyway because all her friends went up there and lit candles. You know what kids do, and they lit candles and they did all kinds of stuff, which in 1978 was devastating. But in 2017, there are ways that, you know, we have just so many ways to get around stuff now and to delineate stuff and to remove things with a computer. And then you get down in the nitty gritty and to pull stuff up. And that's really pretty cool. But, you know, and so I blame them, but I really don't. It's just, but back to.
Well, it's honestly, it's the police department's job to secure the crime scene.
Exactly. They didn't secure it. They didn't do any of the basics that I see as the basics or anything you do today. I mean, I can't even imagine. They should have been up there right away and they weren't. But I always wondered if the kids got up there first and found it and then didn't know what to do. And then there was this whole, I don't know. And everyone's in denial. And most of them, as the media says, they're not lying. They disremember. As if that's a word.
I actually want to touch upon that too. So the night that she disappeared, that on the 7th, right?
Yes, sir.
She had attended a few parties and then she was going to walk home. And I think I had read that she'd asked some friends for a ride home and they said no.
That is true.
So can you pick the story up there? What can you fill us
well,
in a little bit?
Well, you know, obviously it's hearsay, but I may have discussed this with said people, and they just said the guy, he was driving only enough gas to get he and one of them home, and we lived near the turnpike, but it was only like a mile and a half, and gas was what, 50 cents? It's not now. And he right. just, they didn't want to. And it's also hearsay, but I've heard it from other people that she was had gotten in a fight with her friend who was also in the car, who said that's why they weren't going to give her a ride. And I have discussed this with her more than once in different forms of my lovely attitude. So I got more of a confession out of her. So a little bit, but she did say she did that. But back to evidence, but there is evidence that I can lean on and produce that say that maybe things were even more, that maybe there was an earlier fight and some of the minor injuries were maybe in an earlier fight with said person in car. So there's that little angle that they all refute, but there's just it's science. Back to it's science. It's just the way the wounds worked, that there was a fight before a fight. Because the head right. injuries were after the scratches and the things that when you're in the process of decomposing show up, and you can just, you can delineate which comes first, you know, the chicken or the egg, you can do all that. And there was definitely a fight before that, and definitely with a female.
Wow.
DNA is a fabulous thing and it doesn't decompose.
I know you have your suspect. Is there,
I also have my pre-suspect, so there you go.
So if we're to believe that she got in a fight with a girl,
mm-hmm.
how does your suspect that you believe, how would he tie in with that girl? Was he dating her or something?
They knew each other. They, I guess you'd say they dated. How's that? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to put it any other way, but they had definitely knew each other, because not just because everyone knew each other, but because they in particular knew each other. And female was also mad at my sister, because my sister was in a pretty committed relationship. I mean, you know the story. She was pregnant, and she was pregnant with this Michael guy whose brother had died the week before. Because he became the first suspect, even though he was in a funeral home at ours. So that's how good the cops are. I mean, the officers of the law in Kennebunk. But yeah. There is an understory, and she's confessed to it once, and then when she was drunk, and then she sobered up and then said no, and then she got really drunk and said yes, and then she was on drugs and said yes, and then
yeah. What did she confess to? Yeah. Getting in a fight with your sister?
Well, that she was in a previous fight. Because part of the issues we have is there's DNA. Her DNA is there too. And they initially attribute it to a brother, but she has two brothers, and the way DNA works, they're probably a lot closer to identical since they're identical twins. And ironically, their birthday is today, but we won't go there. And so her, it's at 80% match. So that says it's a sibling, not, or a parent.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be him, I guess. But so that's the kind of thing that we had now, but didn't have then. But I've probably been more pursuant in it in the last, well, right before COVID kind of shut us down, than I was, you know, the first 35 years or whatever. Because this movie that, at least it got me back on the horse, so to speak. And I could use my, not just what I could do, but who could do it for me. So I had, my resources were a lot more abundant than probably even the state, so.
So what was life like after Mary was found? Because people knew almost immediately that it was, had been murder, correct?
Oh, yeah.
And
you would have to have been.
No, I mean,
completely. Utter idiot not to know and not have any. I mean, there's no way it couldn't have been
the police. Just, I mean, they let everyone know it happened, that it was murder, like soon after.
They should have, but I'm telling you, if you ever lived through this police department, you would have just shook in your head. They were like, well, you know, and I mean, I was in college. You know, and took enough anatomy to know the difference between what a body looks like in an accident and a body looks like bashed in. Like, well, yeah, but we haven't. It was like a bad TV show. We haven't made all those determinations yet. Half her head is missing. Hello. I mean, my dad was like, so dad, he just had to be the cool one, had to keep it together. My mom was a wreck. She didn't know what was going on. So she was in a fog. And people were coming and going, but in the house. And like I said, they showed us the body in the basement, and then it was at Bimber's, the funeral home, like immediately. And they did these, you know, it was weird how they made her all up her face, but she, you know, you could tell. So it was very oddly done to me in retrospect. But
did they say it was like a sexual crime, or is it? Someone was pissed at her.
They never told us. I mean, it's pretty obvious. Just in, but they never did the tests for it. Like, that's the weird thing to me. They went, like, it never went to a real morgue, and there was no autopsy. It went right from the basement of the police station to, so no one, you know, that's what I do now, but I mean, no one weighed organs, no one. It was just a, no one did samples were done, but that's a whole other story. That wasn't an official police thing. They didn't do scrapings officially. And they were weird about it. They said, well, her fingernails, she must have chewed them or they were broken. But let's just say evidence was procured that they didn't bother to do. And it wouldn't, in a standard autopsy, it's what we would do. Or what is done, and it wasn't done, but it was done. If that makes any sense.
Why do you think that is?
I think he already knew who did it. I do, just from the way things, not at the time, I think he knew at the time. I don't think at the time it became so clear to me as it did as the years have gone on. It's actually getting clearer and clearer. Because there's, yeah, he knew. I know he knew. And I think maybe he even was told, but he knew and nothing was done. And I, you know, I could say that the guy's long dead. His ex-wife, well, his wife, it wasn't ex-wife, but his wife's widow, whatever, told, his kids told us. His daughter-in-law made a big bed confection. It's all in writing. So they all knew. They all lived with it.
Jesus.
Yeah. Oh, it's, Now, as far as Olenchuk, I don't think he knew. I mean, he didn't. And that was the port, and they didn't, the Kennebunk port, so they didn't really share information, which is weird. But
they're so close to each other. I don't know why they would have shared.
Yeah, so, they act like, though, they're on different planets sometimes with information share. And that's when, you know, being what I do is you never talk to the cops. You never talk to the hierarchy. You talk to the dispatcher. You talk to the second lowest ranked cop, police officer. You talk to the people who haven't been in long enough to have stuff to hide, but aren't young enough to follow the book. So you find those guys in the middle, you talk to them, and they'll tell you stuff. But Kennebunk was like, I think, 4 or 5. They spent time pulling over tourists rather than... So this one gentleman who we talked to us earlier when he was worried, he knows. And he'll go to his grave with it, and he quit the force because of it. So moved to Montana, last week, but... He knows.
Maybe he'll write up a confession and leave it in the safety deposit box you'd open after he passes or something.
He may. He knows. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's, you know, but that cop knows. And he knew at the time, and he brought it up, and everyone just downplayed it. So I realize it's a supposition, but in my heart of hearts, I know he knew. I knew it. And I think he got a confession. And then this person went back to what he was going to be doing and off the reservation, as my mother would have said. And so he wasn't there. He wasn't. The big thing is he wasn't supposed to be there. And he was. So that's another weird thing.
Who wasn't supposed to be there? That officer?
The perpetrator. No, the bad guy.
Your suspect, you said he weren't supposed to be where? Yes.
In he wasn't town? Supposed to be in town. Because he was... Otherwise, how do I put that? He was in the service. So he was supposed to be on a base or wherever they put them. And he wasn't because he had come home for the weekend. But nobody supposedly knew he was home. But 10 people saw him. And the paperwork all says he was home. So, you know, if you ever need government, if you ever need where someone's supposed to be from the feds, call me.
I will. Yeah,
this is what I do.
We might actually look into that.
I will some of these more other cases. Than happy to help you out there.
I appreciate that. So describe life after, you know, Mary has been found. She's passed. You put her in the ground.
Okay, so she's buried. Well, we'll start there. Just, you know, the funeral and...
suspicion, your suspicion of your neighbors and friends and stuff. Because at the time, you don't know everything you know now.
So... Yeah, the way I am, I didn't trust anybody. Everybody was a suspect at this point that was in her group. So, and I was home until going to go back to school in the fall. So I was a pain in the ass for 2 months, asking questions, bugging her friends. You know, I mean, if I was who I am now, I'd be swabbing the whole bunch of them. It would be, you know, I would, but back then I just knew to talk, and I cornered them, so to speak, and got, you know, asked them questions, and then got 85 different stories. I mean, this is only a week, 2 weeks, a month later, and the stories were all screwed up, or it was a couple of them were exactly the same. So you know what that means. The stoners, God knows what they were talking about. But I mean, they'd come up with different stories. And I went up to Gracie Evans Field with the state cops. And, you know, they took pictures, which is that. They said there were no pictures, but I was there when they were taking pictures. So I had to go get them, get them from the archives. And I had to, yeah. So... Thank God for George Bush. That's all I can tell you, as he was wonderful at getting me stuff. Old George, 41. Talk about connections, right?
Yeah, he's got his
He was a big help there. As we went later on. But at that point in 78, cut a wide berth for me because I was on a mission. And they kept shutting me down and
but mostly I have interviews. I mean, I have handwritten interviews that I saved of what people said, and then any discrepancies, I'd go and take it to this. And they didn't want to hear it. That was the thing that frustrated me the most and made me the most suspicious. They didn't want to hear it. It was like, but I was, I mean, I was into it. And then I worked on the turnpike. So you'd ask, you know, people that worked on the turnpike with you, because they're all local. So you're talking to them. And then, to be honest, it was like, I kind of put it away and went back to school and did my, finished my year. And then I went to dental school until my life started to be my life, and got married and had kids. And then I went to the University of New Haven and got my Francis degree, because I got good at it in a small dose. So I needed paperwork that said I was good at it, so I didn't have to get people to sign things that said I was doing a good job. That's who I am as a person. So I got that paperwork. And then Dr. Henry Lee, who is an angel, he's the guy who said OJ did it and they fired him.
I recognize the name.
Henry Lee, oh, he's fantastic. He's still sharp as a tack. So anyway, he did a lot of the, we call it dirty work, just, you know, slang. And he did a lot of the real deep dive for me and got a lot of the information and did a lot of the preliminary DNA stuff in 96. And then he got me in with the FBI because I could do that. He got me to be the Native American person, which is now indigenous or whatever they call them. And so, so I get good at that. But the better you get at what you do, the nichier you get, the more people want to help you out, because they're going to need what you know. Like you, they need to know what you two know. So they're nicer to you and they do your dirty work and you do their dirty work, so to speak. And it's not really dirty work. It's like scut work. It's not like illegal.
Right.
Right.
But yeah.
So do you think because of your experience and what happened to your family that kind of directed you into this field?
Yes. Like, I was always curious about it in school. And then when there were courses available, because most dentists just want to make a lot of money and do what you do. So, I mean, and I'm not trying to be unfair, but that's how it is. And this wasn't a money, back in the day, this wasn't a big deal, but I was good at reading x-rays and records and the basics. So one of my professors said, you'll be really good at this. He's the one who got me the fellowship. And then I got to get my master's through, because he said, you're good at this. And it, that's how my mind works. I'm kind of analytical, and it's how it works. And I, and definitely, to answer your question, absolutely. But I think I pretended, or I didn't verbalize it and didn't realize it until I was in it for the long haul and went, oh my God, I think I'm doing this for this reason versus the good of man. And oh yeah, I'm going to save other people from this heartache. No, but you know, and I'll close your stuff. And I'm not a psycho. I don't good with psycho babble, but I think I saw what good I was doing, and then I realized that I could also make it work for me, which sounds funny, right. But because a lot of this, like I said, a lot of stuff I had was maybe not obtained in the most legal way. So, but yeah, I thank you, but I'm good at what I do.
I think you deserve, I think you deserve get it any way you can as a family member.
And I like that. And I'm going to, yeah. And it really, you know, I thank you, because a lot of people went, oh, you know, aren't you worried you're going to get arrested? No. What are they going to arrest me for? Stealing a shirt that someone gave me? No. Maybe the information I got from it. Eh, I don't know.
So I actually traveled, you know, I went to the bridge where she was last seen, and then I traveled the route to Gracie Evans Field, which is about a 10-minute drive, maybe.
Yeah.
And there's no way, had it been someone that was not local, they would have gotten on 95 at that point. Because you cross over 95 right there, and then continue on to the field. So does that tell you that it was somebody local?
Absolutely. And we lived in that route. So they would have had to go buy our house. So I always figured it was someone saying he was taking our home and kept going.
Right.
Because they would have had to gone right by the house. Because we, 95, our house was perpendicular to 95. So they had to go over the highway. They went right by our house. So
wow.
I'm sure logically she would have thought, I'm going home. And then, because I don't think she was going to party again because she was going to go to a funeral. I mean, it just isn't
right. And,
logical.
And potentially being in a fight with one of her friends or whatever earlier in the night.
Right, she's probably aggravated.
It's like, yeah, I just want to go home, go get some sleep. Tomorrow's a big day, whatever.
Right, clean up these scratches. And
You did mention that Gracie Evans Field is a place for kids to go hang out and party, though, as well, right?
Oh, God, yeah. Adults. So, everybody. I mean, not
he me. might have said, hey, get in, I'll give you a ride home. Go by your house. And she's like, what are you doing? Oh, come on, just come and hang out for a few more minutes just to get her there. And then, you know, done, try to do whatever he wanted to do with her or whatever.
Right, or even when she tried, knowing her, and this is just speculation, obviously, our own reenactment. But she might try to get out. She was that kind of kid, and he might have smacked her. So, because she was beat up enough and in different stages, like girl, and I call it girl fighting, and I'm sure some feminists will come after me, but that scratchy, pulley hair stuff, she was missing a hunk of hair. Well, you know, noticeable, but it's stuff girls do, scratch. But the big stuff, there was obviously fists, and then there was obviously chains. So, you know what I mean? It was a different. And it sounds like people have accused me of lying about it, but you can tell the difference. It's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell the difference. Bruising is time frame.
Any idea where that chain would have come from? Was it something you think the killer took from the field?
They're fishermen or a handyman, or it's just a chain. You know, I mean, anything, you probably haul stuff with it, you know, like a. You know, like a tow chain. It just could have pulled anything with it, and a chainsaw. My God, everyone had a chainsaw. Right. I got one in the trunk of my car now, but we won't go there. But yeah, I mean, chainsaws are chainsaws in Maine, where we were. So, but the chain was definitely some kind of tow chain. And I am not a chain expert, and they do exist, believe it or not. But it was that kind of heavy gauge, but not. And there was rust. So there's rust in the wounds. And I pointed that out, and they're like, oh, well, you know, there's rust. Well, duh. But,
sitting in the back of a pickup, there would, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, isn't that?
And your suspect had a pickup, too, you said? Or you...
Well.
At the time?
He was in the service, so he had access to one. His parents had one. So, yeah, I mean, definitely he had access to one, you know.
To your knowledge, was he ever interviewed by PD?
No. Oh, well, yes. But they said he wasn't there. And then when that was part of my digging around, and we knew he was there, then they said, oh, yeah, we talked to him. But he had to go back or something. But he didn't go back till Sunday night. And all this transpired Friday night and Saturday morning. So, hello. But no, they dismissed it. And they came up with people like, there's this one guy who was always in trouble. His last name was Foley. And everybody brought him up because he's like the usual suspect. But he only had one good arm. And you can tell a right-handed person from a left-handed person, wound-wise, even.
Right.
And they were definitely right-handed wounds. And he only had one left arm. So, yeah, not him. But they like him.
Right.
It's the classic. He's a bad guy, so let's pick it, you know, put it on him and a couple other people who are suspicious and,
right.
You know, the classic things. But and then there's, you know, a couple other people that were always in trouble, but it didn't fit it didn't fit. And they all had alibis, so it's like.
I feel like we hear the same story all the time. I don't know if it's just Maine or if I assume it's probably every state has these cover-up type stories that the good old boy network where. The police officers are hiding or covering up stuff for other people, and it's just disgusting.
Specifically like 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
Yes. Frame too. And little towns and you're right, it's Massachusetts. Oh my God. The ones, because back when I first started doing it, would have been in I lived for 3 years on Vinyl Haven.
Oh, nice.
Oh my God. That's a whole other set of stories. But, because everyone's DNA is the same, but that's a whole other set of stories. But when I first started doing it in Massachusetts, was in like 88, and you're exactly right. It was these small towns covering up because everyone was either related or had enough skeletons that everybody knew the
what everybody else was doing. So a lot of them got covered up, and we didn't discuss, and that's back to, if you read the archives and stuff, it's like, oh, people went missing. People didn't run away more in the 80s than any other time, but they tended to just say, oh, in the 80s. And it was always a vagrant that was doing the crime. More often than not,
and statistically. A lot of hitchhiking as well, right, back then. That's how people got around.
Exactly. I mean, so there is that, but Brisky. But there is that. But there's still that cover-up. And Jeff really hit it because they were small. But, yeah, Jeff's absolutely right, though. There's a lot of cover-up. And because in big cities, people get lost anyway. But in the country, you got a farm. I mean, I cannot tell you down here how many people they dig up. And I get called in and say, and they're funny, though, because the South is like Maine used to be, but with better weather. But they sit there, they go, you know who it is? I'm like, nope. I can tell you it's a guy. I can tell you, you know, how long he's been in the ground. But all I need to know is is he an Indian? No. Okay, good. Keep digging, guys. I'm like, wait a minute.
Oh, jeez.
Jeez.
This one. But seriously, all they worry about is whether they're indigenous or not, because then they can't build. But they are, they're so cavalier. Well, just put them with the others. The others? Excuse me. Oh, I don't think we should investigate this a little.
Oh, my goodness. So I got one more question for you.
Yes, sir.
What is closure to you at this point with Mary's case? What would be closure for you?
You know, that's a good question. And I've thought about this. But since I know the answer, I figure God's going to get him. So whatever transpires on this earthly plane, okay, well, will or he won't. But God's going to get him. And he's going to get him good. And that's enough for me. You know,
well,
I'm past that point in my own age where, you know, I'm hanging from a tree or something. I just think the way the universe works is it's going to work out just fine. So that's closure for me. But I know the answer. So I'd love the world to know, but I know.
Mm-hmm. You know,
hopefully that answer comes to the rest of the world sometime.
Exactly. You know, the universe has a way of rescuing the good. So.
So,
but it got me on a good path. I mean, I'm not a victim. I don't like victimology. So I think you guys pointed out that it got me on a path to help other people. Mm-hmm. And some people aren't as, and I don't say stable and meaning they're, but a lot of people need that concrete. This is who it is. This is, and a lot of times I don't solve. It's not like CSI. I just tell them who it is a lot of times. Right. And I don't usually even get elaborate because usually all I get is teeth. It's 30 years. I can just tell them, yeah, this is Uncle Dave. And so they're happy about that. So.
Well, Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us.
I feel like we're family we like, you know, the family you want to be with. So thank you for that. Yeah. You guys are great. You crack me up too, because it's like you have such good insight without being like, I say know-it-alls, but you know what I mean? It's like, you know, but you don't have to be, you know, oh, well, this is what I see. You let me talk. And a lot of it, this is very cathartic too, because a lot of it, you can't tell certain people because one, they'll tell the next person, then it gets distorted or, right. You know what I mean? Or they don't really listen. So they hear, well, that can't be right. Or, well, I didn't hear it that way. And I'm really glad you went and looked at that, because that's what I tried to get through to them. How can it not be someone local? It has to be someone who knows this is where the people party. This is, because you can't, if you don't know it's there, you don't know it's there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's a dead end dirt road. Yeah.
There's not signs. There's no street lights. You have to know it's there. And you can see where the fires were and where people were, you know, I had bonfires and stuff. And I said, look at these tire tracks. Don't you guys do tire tracks? Well, yeah. Well, it could be any vehicle. No, I'm not a car person. I'm a truck tire. And look, it's worn. It's not even evenly worn. So can't you tell from that? You know, stuff that common sense. You know, I might have had a Kimmy at the time, but I know the difference between a tire with tread and a tire with bald. Hello. And you know, difference between a, you know, a 19-inch radial and a 17-inch, you know, regular old beat up retread. But yeah. So yes, you're right. That's what sparked it, was I'm going to be a tire expert.
Yeah. Oh, can, yeah. Like my cousin Vinny, is that what you can say? I was just going to say that.
I'll be Marissa Tomei in my dream. But, well, gentlemen, like I said, you need anything. You must have my email, right? Because it's a Google Mail, or do you need email? Well, whatever you need, just tell
me. I'll message you and ask you if anything you need.
Yeah, Cujo's at it again. So
I think a lot of times, like you had said, we kind of might know the answer, but I like to have the people listening hear it from the family member. So I'll ask questions that I probably already know the answer to, but just to hear from you guys.
Right, and it gives it, like, you know, but it gives it like validity, and your podcast, your viewers, listeners, whatever you call your subscribers, it makes it real versus, well, Travis knows everything, and then there's Jeff, you know, and then, you know, they're like, well, maybe he guided her into this answer. And because that's the other thing I noticed, and I will let you go, but a lot of this crime scene stuff is, sometimes the cops give the people the answers and they're supposed to just parrot it back because they don't know, and they'll agree because they're in shock or whatever. So I like that you're guides to the universe, but not pushy. If that makes sense.
Try not to be it.
Just getting the truth.
Well, thank you, Beth.
Oh, guys, this has been great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been awesome.
You guys are great. But like I said, if you seriously... send me whatever you need, and I will give you my expert opinion, and I can get you a couple more. So,
all right, awesome.
All right,
have a good night,
guys.
All right,
take
bye.
Care. Thank you very much.
If you have information regarding Mary's case, please contact the Maine State Police at 207-657-3030. As always, thank you for watching.
Investigators to Alabama this week.
So we have some breaking news from Florida. An arrest has been made.
Tonight, after years of agony, a glimmer of hope for the family.
Investigators spent hours searching through this house off Pennsylvania Avenue.
What could be a major development in the search for missing Alabama teenager?
Tonight, a stunning twist in the search for Taylor.
Somebody out there knows something.
They want to lay him to rest their way, not by somebody else's way.